Hi, I'm Joey. I just turned 7, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's Almost Above Ground Audio Magazine. Great show, Daddy.
Thank you very much, JoJo. Happy birthday, bud. I love you. That's my son, Joey. He turned 7 a couple of days ago. Sounds great. Welcome to Outside the Loop. This is Chicago's Almost Above Ground Audio Magazine. I am Mike Steven. It's great to be here with you today for show number 934. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is our engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio. So good morning to Bob. And again, welcome to the show. On the show today, we talk some local history, zeroing in on Chicago fashion history. There's an event coming up later this month all about that. We get a preview. Also, have you noticed news racks downtown are disappearing? Local publications that place their free weeklies in these news racks sure have. What happened and what's the future of these news racks? We dive into that topic today. Now, you heard my son Joey opening up the show. We had a big 7th birthday party for him that we folded into our annual block party this past weekend, and we had a ball. And block parties are great. There's something about hanging out in the street with some good food and drink. Don't tell anyone, but we roasted a whole pig at the block party. On second thought, yes, tell somebody, because that is awesome. Around this region, especially in Chicago, are what I like to call the nooks and crannies of the neighborhoods. I've always been fascinated by these areas. What am I talking about? Well, think of the wooden porch network on the backs of apartment buildings. Rogers Park and Edgewater come to mind here, or the corner taverns in Bridgeport, or the small storefronts in Lakeview. And you never know what you're going to find in local basements. Take, for example, the basement of Humboldt Park resident Nathan Weil. For the last 5 years, he operated the Humboldt Jungle out of his basement. It's an underground comedy and music venue. And yes, it's literally in his basement. Patrons could reserve a seat by making a donation online. People could bring their own alcohol and even pre-order pizza for when they showed up to the basement. I love this idea. This is an example of community within a community, of breaking down the traditional barriers that may define what a venue is. And I just love the idea of a good basement hangout, you know? The Sun-Times reported that the Humboldt Jungle was featured on a popular Instagram page last month, and suddenly the city of Chicago started to pay attention to that basement. Here's what the Sun-Times said, quote, "While the owner received 4 cease and desist orders from the Department of Business Affairs and Consumer Protection on August 28th, the department cites him selling tickets without an amusement license, failing to display an amusement license, offering, selling, serving, providing, and/or storing liquor without the required license, and selling or offering food without a required retail food establishment license. Weil faces between $2,000 and $5,000 in fines and has an October 28th court date. For his part, he disagrees that he was selling tickets, food, and alcohol without a license. He claims patrons gave donations online to reserve a seat, most of which went to the performers. The rest of the proceeds he would invest back into the venue, like audio equipment." End quote. Weil went on to say that he's never had a noise complaint and he gets along with his neighbors. I know the city is looking to make sure that people aren't opening up clubs and hosting unruly events, since that could be a public safety issue, but I feel for this guy. He's trying to provide a space for comedians and musicians to perform, and in doing so, he is creating community. If it's me making the call, I'm letting the basement comedy and music venue play on, because come on, man. One of the great things about the hustle and bustle of downtown Chicago is the feeling that when you're there, you're in the know. And sure, you could argue that with our cell phones. We always have access to lots of information, but there's something special about coming across one of those big metal news racks where a variety of papers, especially free local weeklies, are available. Recently, dozens of these news racks have disappeared, and this came as a surprise to many. Brian Hagelke is the editor and publisher of New City Magazine. He's also the chair of the Chicago News Racks Task Force, and he was surprised too. And Brian is here with us in Outside the Loop. Brian, nice to talk to you again, man. How are you?
Absolutely. Great to talk to you too.
So this is kind of a big deal when we think about it, and maybe some of us know or have noticed that this happened, but I think a lot of us maybe don't know. So let's start off by talking about your organization that you're the chair of, the Chicago News Racks Task Force. So as I understand it, this is an organization that exists to really act as a bridge of communication between local publications like New City and others and the city of Chicago. So just tell us here briefly, how did this organization come about? How does it work?
Sure. So roughly 30 years ago, not quite, then Mayor Richard M. Daley visited Paris and saw fancy news, multiple publication news racks, and decided he wanted those for Chicago. At the time, we all had these varying colors of boxes, of individual boxes on, you know, virtually every corner of downtown and throughout the city. And the publications were not really interested in sacrificing kind of their individual identities for this group thing. And long story short, we ended up in federal court trying to prevent this from happening under the First Amendment. And the litigants included Tribune, Sun-Times, USA Today, the Chicago Reader, and New City. So I was there at the beginning. Over the years, most of the other publications are still in business, but the various people who were involved have all long gone. And so this committee that we were all part of initially, which was us, and it in the early days, it included the city, it included the CTA, it included the Greater North Michigan Avenue Council. There's a lot of interest in it, and over 100 of these publication boxes were deployed. It was a long and arduous process. A lot of shouting matches, you know, not among us in the city, but shouting matches among publications, because there were not enough slots for the number of publications back then, ironically, that wanted in. And, you know, so it was a tough thing. And over the years, I ended up becoming the chair by attrition. Basically, I was the last one standing who knew what the heck was going on.
Yeah.
You know, and so at one point, you know, about 15 years ago, I was like, God, I'm tired of explaining this to everybody. I'm just going to build like a newspaper blog site that explains everything and lets people know how it works. But, you know, so that was the story, you know, and through every mayor up until the present one, and I'm talking about, you know, Daley, Emanuel, Lightfoot, there was sometimes contentious, but generally, you know, professional and cordial communications about these racks, problems with them, et cetera, from both directions.
So take us into the conversations there. I mean, what are the problems that people have? Because on one hand, I don't know. I mean, I love news. I love the dissemination of information and news. And I love local news. And I especially love it when it's free. And so all of us can have access to it. What are the big complaints when it comes to these news racks downtown?
Well, there were two, you know, sort of major complaints, and both with some validity. One was that they'd become underused. I mean, you know, as it's no big secret that it's been a devastating couple of decades for print media. And, you know, where we used to have more publications than slots, we ended up with more slots than publications. And so what we did last year is I worked closely with the vendor, JC Deco, to clean up that problem. We reallocated every slot that was still available to publications that were still going to use them. And the daily newspapers, ironically, the Tribune and Sun-Times, had decided not, you know, they've pulled, as you may have noticed, there's no such thing as a newspaper box for either one of those.
Right, right.
So they pulled out of everything. So they had created special heavy, you know, coin-operated boxes for the daily newspapers. they were sitting empty. So what they did is JC Deco welded those shut. And then they cleaned all the boxes up and they reallocated them so that every slot was uniform and it was all the same publications. It was all publications using it. So we thought we'd solve that problem. And then the other complaint is that they become trash catchers, because the city has an inadequate presence of garbage cans around the city. Mm-hmm. And, people they'll open things up and throw trash anywhere they can when you don't have a good system for trash disposal, which the city does not have. And so people would shove trash in, and the vendor was supposed to be keeping those cleaned out every week, but they were hit or miss, we'll say, in terms of the quality of their upkeep. So those were the complaints. I think they were, we were in good communication with the Johnson administration, through that process, and then all of a sudden, no communication.
Yeah. So let's get into what we're going through here in the present. So these racks, these news racks, I mean, think of all the people that are on foot downtown. The exposure for these local news weeklies is just fantastic because of the thousands of people that are going by and can reach in and grab a copy of New City or the copy of the Reader for the week. So tell us what happened here. The city, as I understand it, removed around 46 of these news racks downtown. And this is a pretty significant thing. There was no communication as far as you knew. So this was a surprise. What the heck went down?
So what happened was a couple of the newspapers, over the course of a week or so, reached out to me and said, "Hey, what's going on?" Because of the role I played, I was always the center point of contact.
Right.
They're like, "Something, what's going on? There's, our drivers are saying there's 8 or 10 boxes or whatever missing." When I got the second report, I said to myself, something's clearly up. And so I got very aggressive in reaching out to JC Deco and to say, basically what's up, including, texting and emailing. And eventually they got back to me and said, "Hey, it's, our clients, the city," and the city said, "Every one of these boxes has to go. So we're removing them all." And then I immediately conveyed that information to all the publications. This information got to me, ironically, on the Friday before the Democratic convention opened in Chicago on Monday. So the timing and the optics were terrible for the city in terms of, the idea of suppressing the free press, especially when the Reader had a cover story about protests in the city. It made their explanations ring a little hollow. And, the city has a prerogative to do this, just like Daley decided he wanted them. The mayor can decide they don't want them. The problem is that the manner in which they did not communicate with the publications, all of which are independent. Many are BIPOC owned, publications or serving underserved communities like the Southside Weekly. And all of which are small and many nonprofit businesses. So it was really sort of as anti-progressive as an action could be. It's something you'd expect Daley to do,
right?
Not Brandon Johnson, but they did it. And, that's kind of the upshot. They're all going to be gone. So to the extent you still see some, that's just because it takes a lot of time to pull all these. It took a long time to install them, and it's a big project. I have no idea what kind of bill the city is going to have to pay for this.
So is that the plan? I mean, do we know, because there was lack of communication, all of a sudden, surprise, a bunch of these news racks are gone, and the Chicago News Racks Task Force is in existence for this very reason, to have communication between the publications and the city. So have you heard, are there going to be more removals of these news racks? Is that the overall plan, to get rid of all of them downtown?
Yes, that's my understanding. I mean, I reached out to my contacts that I'd worked with in the Brandon Johnson administration at the same time I was reaching out to JC Deco, or once I got the news, to, request a conversation to find out what the rationale or what was happening. And crickets, no response whatsoever. So I kind of, I moved on. At a certain point, if you work in the city long enough, you know, when they're going to communicate and when they're not. And I'm expecting 100% of them are going to be gone. And what you're going to start seeing are independent boxes start creeping up all over downtown, and people will start complaining about that again. You know,
yeah,
that's just going to be the reality. I know the Reader's been running a fundraiser to raise money to get boxes to put out. You know, it is what it is.
Well, and the Reader got hit pretty hard. I mean, from what I've seen, they were looking at about 8,700 copies in circulation before these news racks were removed, and then now they're down to about 3,400 copies in circulation. So, I mean, that's a massive hit right there for the Reader.
Yeah, well, the problem for them is that they'd already printed the publication. You know, because this was done in such a disorderly fashion, that's the biggest complaint, right? That there was no reason they couldn't have communicated this, and we couldn't have said, let's come up with a plan that we could communicate. You guys do this street 1 week, this, you know, and then people could have kept, you know, filling the ones, you know, up until the last were gone. Because of the way they're doing it, it's completely ad hoc. So the Reader had all these publications they printed that they didn't know where they could put them out. We were fortunate in that we were like days, literally like the weekend before going to press. You know, so we were able to adjust our press run, so we didn't print them for the boxes. But, you know, it's just a lousy way to interact with, you know, publications. And I don't really understand, you know, why anybody wants to create enemies in the press when you don't have to. But this is the kind of thing that does that, right? You know,
and I don't think, I mean, to my knowledge, the city hasn't done anything like this before. I mean, the city's done some, let's be clear, we know the city's done some stuff. But when it comes to this, and we're kind of in new-ish territory.
Yeah, it's a little bit like when Daley sent the snow plows up to dig up Meg's Field in the middle of the night. You know, it's arbitrary and unilateral, and you know, like I said, it's anti-progressive and just, you know, all around not cool. But ultimately, there's no legal issue here, because, you know, as long as they're not suppressing the preventing publications from putting boxes out on their own, there's not a legal issue. And so I think that's long run, that's fine. But short run, it was lousy, and it was certainly lousy to have it happen during the Democratic National Convention.
Right. And I think that, like we were talking about earlier, maybe what happened here with these news racks downtown got lost in the shuffle because, hey, we've got the DNC in town, so there's a lot happening there. You know, this is something, because when we think of the free press and local news, I mean, ultimately, these are small independent businesses. Yes, some are nonprofit, I get that, but they're looking at their bottom line as well. And from that angle, I mean, you have these smaller operations such as New City that, you know, have an overhead, and you have a budget, and you have to pay your bills. And this really hurts local businesses. This is something I've actually heard a few times in just talking with people who run businesses in Chicago. I was talking to small business owners, restaurant owners on this show back in December, and they said that this administration has just been the worst when it comes to local business. And it's like, you don't want to be in business because the city is so not responsive. They pull stuff like this. And I think that that's an angle that maybe you can speak to, that these are businesses, aren't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, to lose a dramatic percentage of your distribution just literally overnight, for any business, can be devastating. And, you know, so it's, you know, I would say it's the biggest loss of distribution since the pandemic shutdown. You know, that's the reality of it, is for any of these publications, because we were all serving, you know, putting out publications in 83, you know, these news racks. So, you know, you can do the math on it and, you know, depending on how many you were putting in these news racks, but we're all servicing 83 news racks with every issue of our publication. So it was a lot. And also, like you said, it's important distribution, because, you know, if anybody ever said, where can I get a copy? This is where you'd send them, because you knew there'd be copies pretty easy to find. Mm-hmm. You know, now it's, I have, you know, I'm getting emails every day from people who are just frustrated trying to find publications now, find New City. Going out and going from place to place, because places are running out. It's a mess.
you know, going forward here in terms of what's going to happen in the future, you mentioned that, sure, some of these publications, you could get out there and as long as you comply with the city specifications, you can put up your own box that has your product in there. But then you're saying that we run the risk of sort of these newspaper box wars where they're going to be placed all over and maybe not consistent. And it's going to be kind of a hodgepodge of distribution.
Yeah, I mean, this from the city standpoint, I'm guessing they'll be regretting the decision that they made eventually.
Yeah.
Once this all unfolds. I mean, I, you know, the thing about these publication boxes is they're reasonably aesthetically pleasing and uniform, you know, in terms of their look and placement. All of that's going to go by the wayside. And, you know, it varies, you know. So for New City, we're in the process, you know, I don't know if you see us regularly in print, but we've moved dramatically over the years to now we're, you know, kind of an expensive monthly. The current issue is 164 pages. It's a thick, you know, perfect bound book. And we're just accelerating our shift to being a paid publication that you have to get a subscription to. This just kind of, you know, was sort of an unplanned accelerator for us. But for others, like the Reader and some of the others, I think you'll see newspaper boxes starting to proliferate downtown. And it'll bring other people out of the woodwork with boxes. That's the thing. There'll be people who, you know, were not in the racks that'll suddenly start putting boxes out. So, you know, we'll see.
So do you feel like you have any recourse at all going forward? Like there's something you can do? I mean, you are the chair of the Chicago News Racks Task Force, and I know that gets you into like some very swanky restaurants, but what can you do or what can we do? I guess that's the better question because, hey, if people are ticked off, maybe they need to exercise their civic power.
Well, there's not much I can do. As far as I'm concerned, it's kind of over, you know. But what readers can do is certainly let the city know that they're unhappy about it. You know, that's, I think, the most powerful tool we ever have is when the public rises up and lets people know they're not happy about it. And I think there certainly is a fair bit of displeasure out there that this has happened. But that's really the only thing that can happen. I don't think it's going to be very easy to change, to reverse the decision. I think, you know, potentially, I guess, they could freeze the removal at where it's at now, and we could revisit it. But this administration doesn't seem to have its ear to the ground on what the public or anybody else is thinking.
Yeah, that seems to be the refrain that we're hearing. So, all right, look, if you're fired up about this, if you'd like to see those news racks remain and really helping out those small, local, weekly free publications here in Chicago that give us a lot of great information that we all need, you can go ahead, email your alderman and let the city know that this is going on. I know that some aldermen were in favor of this. I don't know where others fall when it comes to this issue, but I think we should get the word out here and have a more robust conversation. So, Brian, I appreciate your time. Brian Hagelke is the editor and publisher of New City Magazine. Check him out online, newcity.com. He's also the chair of the Chicago News Racks Task Force. Brian, good luck with everything going forward. I'm sorry this is happening. Hopefully, I don't know, things turn around, but you keep doing what you're doing, man. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. I guess you better say former chair of the News Racks Task Force, because I don't.
That's how it goes here in Chicago, right? You just disappear from all of the room all of a sudden.
Exactly. Exactly. But thanks a lot. And it's great to talk to you.
Studying history isn't only learning names and dates and facts and figures, it's also the understanding and discussion of a human story. Cultural history tells us where we've been and is really an important part of studying history. One element of cultural history is fashion history. Illinois Humanities teams up with the Southside Home Movie Project on September 21st to present Chicago Style at the Green Line Performing Arts Center. That's where we can explore the question, how does fashion thread through generations? Gabrielle Lyon is the executive director of Illinois Humanities, and Ayanna Contreras is an author, an artist, and a fashion archaeologist. She is involved with this project, and they are both here with us today on Outside the Loop. Gabrielle and Ayanna, welcome to the program.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, you got it. So, Gabrielle, let me start with you. Tell us about the project that really led to this event that's coming up on September 21st.
I guess the main thing I want to say is this is a great example of the ways in which Illinois Humanities gets to kind of curators and then get out of the way. So I really want to be very upfront to say the thought that we had and what struck us as an organization dedicated to the public humanities was, my God, Chicago is not just a mecca. We actually interact through our other programs with people who are doing extraordinary work where the design that people think of as far off and distant is actually part of your everyday life. So Illinois Humanities really brought together educators, curators, historians, the like extraordinary Ayanna, and really tried to support a very community-based organic opportunity for three things to happen. I think the first one was to bring designers, artists, educators, historians together. The second was to support a cohort of multi-generational folks to come together to explore questions about identity and style and history. And then the third thing was to kind of document this truly amazing community that came together and frankly contribute to an archive that is very Chicago, but also about people's everyday lives in ways that sometimes we overlook. Sorry for the length of that. but that those are all the pieces. It's a complicated project.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that speaks to the significance of this because there's a lot that has gone into and continues to go into this Chicago Style project. Again, there's an event coming up September 21st. That's from 3 to 6 p.m. And that is at the Green Line Performing Arts Center at 329 East Garfield Boulevard. So, Ayanna, let me go to you because you are someone who is really curating this project and you are deeply involved in the content that is going to be presented and explored and discussed. So in terms of what is included here, can you give us an idea of what you were looking for and what is in this project?
So I've been really lucky to work with the Southside Home Movie Project over the course of a number of years, almost since its inception, on a couple of different projects. And what's so notable to me is there's all of this footage shot mostly in Chicago that you can't find elsewhere. Things like 1940s garments on Black people in color, like that whole concept is exceptionally rare. So sort of to see how these clothes were put together in a very multidimensional way, not just in a magazine or something very static, but like on folks in real time, I think is something that I'm really actively interested in and I'm pulling from. I want to show these garments in motion.
And so in terms of what we can learn about ourselves through fashion and looking at what has come before and studying that fashion history, why is that significant? Why is that important, do you think?
I think what's so interesting is that most people think of fashion as something to put on their body so they're not nude, right? Like right. There's not really a lot of thought about it, but really there is so much that you can express with just pieces of fabric that are on your body and so much historically that has been expressed. So if you think about the hippies, the first thing you think about is the music, maybe. The second thing you think about is what were they wearing, right? And that's the same for almost all cultural, like subcultural movements, especially of the 20th century, and especially here in America. So I think that like thinking about these particular eras and the colors and the movement through the way in which people in that moment decided to like document themselves, I think is an interesting experiment and something that I think other people will be excited to see as well as myself.
When you're looking back on the history, Ayanna, is there a particular style that Chicago has? I mean, this project, it's called Chicago Style, the event on September 21st, Chicago Style. So I'm wondering, what is that Chicago style when it comes to this topic?
Well, if you think about it, Chicago was the second largest city in the country up until, what, the 1970s into the, like, pretty late on.
Yeah.
So it was a huge mecca for all sorts of ideas and looks and style. It might not have been Hollywood, and it definitely wasn't New York, but it definitely had its own kind of brash style. I have a lot of vintage clothes, much of which was made in Chicago. So I'm always looking for unusual color palettes and cool silhouettes and something unique. And also, a lot of the footage that we'll be showing are from fashion shows that were put together by different civic organizations. And a lot of those clothes were either from local boutiques or handmade. So there'll be some very unique pieces that I'll be looking for.
You mentioned clothes being made in Chicago. And I feel like sometimes we don't think about that, where we tend to these days look at the tag on the piece of clothing and it's definitely not from Chicago. But you're saying that actually there was clothing made here in the city.
Absolutely. I mean, more individuals sewed their own clothes, right? Like that was a much more common thing all the way up until fairly recently. But then there were, you know, places where people would have clothes made, especially 12th Street, now known as Roosevelt Road, was a center for that. Places where you could get something unique made. I had my prom dress made, right? Like that was an unusual thing to happen years ago. You would go and have the special garments of your life made, custom made.
And I think one of the things to kind of pick up the point Ayanna is making is, it's also not just history, right? Like the other folks involved with organizing this event, Anne Marie Brown, Edva Tay Jones, they are designers. They are Chicagoans. They are designers. They're extremely aware of, you know, as designers and people participating in the conversation about fashion and Chicago's unique contributions. But it's also part of what people will experience on the 21st, right? So there's this, it's really this framing question, how fashion threads through generations, that I think is really going to be powerful. Because one, we do this now. Individuals go to thrift stores. They can see what Ayanna is talking about once they have that eye to kind of understand not just what they're seeing, but maybe understand what it means, start to make meaning of it in a new way. And then at the fashion show, people can see what folks made through the Chicago Style Project. They get to see some of the really powerful, unique works that the Southside Home Movie Project has really been archiving, which is no small and very important feat. And they can also shop. There's going to be a pop-up thrift store there. So to really thread this into our present moment and say, what's Chicago style? When Illinois Humanities was in Pullman a few weeks ago, asking folks what they thought Chicago style was and asking people to talk about what they were wearing to the Pullman Taste of Chicago pop-up, it was always about unique. It was always about people get to have their unique style here in Chicago. And that is present. That's in our present too. And that's where the public, the humanities, everyday life, that's where this all comes together. So I think it's extraordinarily like exciting, and we're so privileged to have these things weaving together in front of our very eyes.
You know, I was going to ask you about the event, and you were talking about what's happening there. We should mention that this is, again, September 21st. It's called Chicago Style. It is happening at the Green Line Performing Arts Center. That's at 329 East Garfield Boulevard in Chicago. So it sounds like, Gabrielle, what's going to be happening here, we have opportunities to interact, to shop, as you say, but also to see some of this footage that was captured over the years and to enter into a dialogue. And really, like, when we think about history, dialogue, conversation, understanding, interpretation, that's all part of it. And it sounds like this event is going to be just that.
All that and more, because we have this live, we're also going to have this very extraordinary experience of Ayanna Contreras Live, which is not to be missed, not to be missed.
Well, I want to ask Ayanna about that. What is Ayanna Contreras Live? What are you going to be doing there?
It's interesting because probably most people know me as a radio host and DJ. I spent 17 years at WBEZ in Chicago. So like the visual aspect is not necessarily the first thing you think of, but I just love to present ideas and make things come alive for people. You know, some of my favorites, I guess you could say, performers were teachers, right? So like my fourth grade science teacher who made me love science, even though I didn't necessarily love science. I want to be that for music and for fashion and for art. So that's usually my goal. If I can be Mrs. Aldred, then I'm doing my best.
Well, I like to say that teachers are the original influencers. You know, we talk about influencers today, and sure, I get that online, but really teachers and that art of teaching and inspiring people, that's the original influencing in my mind. And so it sounds like you're carrying on that tradition.
That's the goal.
Well, this is going to be a lot of fun and really interesting. This is coming up September 21st. It is called Chicago Style. It is being presented at the Green Line Performing Arts Center, 329 East Garfield Boulevard in Chicago, 3 to 6 p.m. And this is open to everybody, right?
It's open to everybody. It's free. And we're looking forward to, you know, checking out people's looks, having them talk about, you know, what made them pick what they wanted to wear, and also hearing from the folks walking the fashion show about how they assembled their pieces for all of us to see and take a look at. So it's a kind of see, be seen, and be in conversation afternoon.
Sounds great. We can all check out ilhumanities.org for more information and to register for this event. Gabrielle Lyon is the executive director of Illinois Humanities, and Ayanna Contreras, artist, radio, just you're everything, fashion archaeologist, radio host, cultural historian, and really great to talk to both of you. Thank you so much, and good luck with this event, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks so much.
And that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 934 is done. Thank you very much for listening to the show this week. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering skills. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.